Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. This is Catherine Creston with Beyond Words Live. This show is designed to be a platform for survivors to tell their story in their own words. Without further ado, let's see who our guest is today.
Hi, this is Catherine again, and Sunny Soper is our guest today, and she is a master poet, and I'm so excited to have her on today. Hang on one second. Let me bring her on. Sunny.
Hi. Hey, everybody.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. Are you doing okay over there?
I'm doing excellent today. I just had a great lunch and at a local eatery here in Austin, Magnolia Cafe. I'm sure y'all are familiar.
Oh, yeah.
And I ate way too much.
I always do at Magnolia.
Oh, and it's all so good.
Yes,
I agree.
All that good home cooking. It's just, oh, anyway. Well, I want to talk to you today about your story and what your story is involving your poetry and activism and any advocacy that you do, anything. So, I mean, where do you want to start?
Well, I guess we should start with poetry, since that's how I ended up here. I wrote my first poem in 2010. And I didn't really think that anything was going to happen with it. You know, I had shared it with a few friends and, oh, that's great. Oh, that's great. I wish I could write like that, you know, as most artist friends, you know, say, it's like, I wish I could sing like that, or I wish I could play guitar like that. And it's, you know, I always tell people, just pick up the pen and just start writing. Don't edit yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't question what you're writing. Just keep writing. And, so I moved back to Austin from Providence, Rhode Island in 2012, December 2012. I went to an R&B artist concert at Midtown Live here in Austin, and the openers for that concert were two spoken word slam poets here on the Austin scene, and they blew my mind. And I said, oh, my gosh, this is what I can do with all these poems I've been writing. I can read them to people if people actually care enough to listen, you know, and it was really eye-opening for me. It was really an opening to an entire culture that I didn't really even know existed prior to.
Wow.
Yeah, and then, you know, so I shared my first poem the following week, which happened to be February 20th, 2013. And it was pretty funny because I actually entered the slam by accident. A slam is a competition between poets where they have judges and you do your poem and you get your score. And then they, you know, it determines who is in the top three. And then those top three, you know, slam again. And whoever has the top score wins. Usually the prizes are money or slots on a national team. Or things like that. Well, I had accidentally signed up for the slam. I didn't realize. I thought, in my ignorance, I thought that slam was just a code word for a poetry open mic, you know. So, I mean, the poor guy, he looked at me, he said, okay, we need three poems, 3 minutes each. And I was like, wait. And he was like, and then he says, and then the judges, and I was like, wait. The judges was like, his face was like, he actually said, you don't really know what's going on here, do you? Like, I have no idea. All I know is all of a sudden there are judges and scores, and I need more than the one piece I brought on paper. Does anybody have a phone charger, you know?
Well, how fantastic, though, to just dive in like that. I mean, sometimes it's so scary for people to take on adventures like that and, you know, just kind of step out of their box. And you did it without really knowing it. And what a great way.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've kind of always been a both feet, you know, jump off the cliff with both feet type of person when I find something that moves me. You know, I definitely am very jump in with both feet. And I think. Some of the advocacy stuff that I do is primarily because it moves me. You know, I was involved in the pay-to-play movement here in Austin where promoters were charging acts for slots on shows. So, you know, they would pay $75 for 15 minutes on the set. And it just, it would end up being a show bill with 15 acts. And, you know, none of them had been qualified by talent or output or work done on the scene or any of those things. It was just that they had the $75. And it ends up being a very poor experience for fans and artists and everybody. So a group of us went down to City Hall for the Austin Music Commission meeting. It was me, Tierney Johnson with Kinetic Global and Urban Artists Alliance, Jennifer Houlihan, mm-hmm. Executive Director of Austin Music People. I keep thinking of his Facebook name. I can't think of his real name. But with Overload.com was involved. Austin Mic Exchange was involved with Adam Protexter. And we went down to the Austin Music Commission and made a presentation about the perils of pay-to-play. Councilwoman Laura Morrison was actually flipping through the channels one night, you know, just kind of looking for something to watch prior to the city council meeting that was shortly after our presentation, and happened mm-hmm. to catch our presentation. Well, she added an amendment to the downtown density bonus that downtown, a lot of the buildings and businesses down there get financial incentives from the city to do, you know, to have live music venues, to, you know, for different things. Well, if it's the live music venue bonus, then they have to sign an agreement that they will not have any pay-to-play shows in their establishment. And if it is found that they have to reimburse the city for any monies that were granted to them via the downtown density bonus. So it was a really big win. And it was really awesome to see just, you know, the community's voices coming together and the right person seeing it at the right time and bringing it to the attention, and it passed. So, going forward.
Wait a second. Just a little bit, because some people may be confused. Why is pay to play bad?
Well, here's the problem with pay to play is it's seen predominantly in your punk scene or your hip hop scene. And what you see is you see a promoter, and I'll use that term loosely, putting together a show and not having any talent in mind for this show. And they just put out a post, say, on Facebook, hey, you want to be on this show, $75 or $150. We saw some during South by Southwest unofficial shows.
So the musicians or poets or whatever are paying.
Right, the ones paying. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes they make them sell tickets, but and sometimes they make them pay a straight slot fee. And a lot of times with the tickets, if you don't sell a certain amount of tickets, you don't receive your slot. You know, and you have to sell. It's very, very predatory. And the problem with it is that it's not going off of talent or quality. It's going off of bank accounts. So you've got people who have never been on stage. You've got people who downloaded the music from YouTube and then recorded themselves talking over it, or rapping over it on their cell phones. Or, it's just very low quality acts end up getting shine because they don't have to be qualified in any way, shape, or form. And after about the eighth one of those, as a fan, you generally leave the venue.
Yeah.
You know. And promoters will argue that this is, you know, well, how am I supposed to pay for the event if I don't collect from the artists? And it's like, where did you forget that art is not free? We enjoy doing it, but we don't enjoy doing that for free. And we're not just trying to, you know, and we're definitely not paying you for quote-unquote exposure when you don't even have enough faith in your own event that you can pack it yourself without making artists sell tickets and do the groundwork for you. You know, and
seriously,
it's just very predatory. It's very lazy. I haven't heard of any, pay-to-play shows that were great shows that people left like, wow, that show was amazing. You know, it's just, I just have never heard it. So it really cannibalizes the scene because you'll have that one guy who's all excited because he's got his first show. He paid his $75. He's never done a show before. Well, he gets out there and doesn't do that great of a job. Well, everybody who saw him not show ready doing a show is going to remember his name for that, not for his art, instead of him having to audition or submit an electronic press kit or, go through the hoops that you should have to go through to actually get on a bill for a quality show. So that was one example of, I mean, and it's live music capital of the world. How are we fighting against paying artists? How are we charging artists?
Right.
There's so many of them out there.
Why charge them? Why not charge the audience that are coming in?
But that's the thing.
Yeah. And then the promoters are just not confident enough that they're going to get that many people, so they're going to charge the artists. That's crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of the promoters, they just have never done it. So they're not actually promoters. They don't have contingency plans. They don't have business plans. They don't have, what do you do if you don't pack the venue? How are you going to pay the venue fee? Did you negotiate a portion of the drink sales or a portion of the door sales? What negotiations did you do to make this a viable event?
Right. Goodness.
That's a really big issue, and it doesn't happen as much in the rock and other like blues and things like that genres until you get to things like the Battle of the Bands.
Mm-hmm.
You pay so much and you get to battle your band or whatever. And supposedly you're supposed to win something, but so many times the people putting on the Battle of the Bands leave town once they've collected all their money, and there's not even anybody to get assistance from at the show. It's just a complete scam. That was a really big deal. And it was just really time for artists to, first of all, start demanding what they're worth. And for promoters to understand that you can't just, it's not a cash cow.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just come in here and charge, 15 artists $300 each for 10 minutes on stage and then leave. That's just not how it should be. That's just not how it should be. So we spoke about it. We got results. That was a really cool accomplishment. And I look forward to more advocacy in the music scene here. It's super exciting. So,
man, I didn't realize all that was going on. That's great that y'all were out there doing that. There's so many predators out there. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of predators out there, and they come in all shapes and sizes, definitely. Unfortunately.
Most certainly, they really do. And most of them are don't look like it. You would look at them and you wouldn't have any idea that they would have that sort of nefarious aim
right
in their repertoire, as far as other advocacy, I did read a piece at the No More Domestic Violence Rally at City Hall, and that was really cool. I really just started sharing about my personal experience as a survivor. It's only been a couple of years. It happened in 99, and I think I keep it to myself as much as I do, partly because the look on people's faces when you tell them something, horrible that you've been through is just not conducive to me feeling good about it. I don't like the look of pity. I don't like the, oh, you poor baby. I'm so much more than a survivor. I'm a thriver. That was an experience
right.
that helped shape me, but it's not something that, I would ever want as like a label or, it's just not a definition of me as a woman, as a survivor, as a poet, as a business, person. It's an element of, but not the all inclusive description.
Right.
But
there's no reason to not share the strength. And that's what I hear in so many of your poems is your strength, the empowerment. And that's why I'm becoming a fast fan of yours because you have a lot of strength in your poetry and a lot of confidence in your poetry, and I love that about it. And I'd like to see a lot more of that too coming out.
Oh, there's a lot more coming. There's definitely a lot more coming. I'm doing I'm actually working on a book now for my 2015 release. It's going to be a companion project with my CDs for public consumption that came out in August. The book is going to be called For Personal Use Only, and I'm really excited about the concept of the setup and the way the poems are sort of formulating for the ideas that I have. And it's been really cool to watch it mesh and really, you know, kind of come together for itself. You know, I kind of spoke it into existence, and now it's got a life of its own. I jokingly say that my poems tell me when they're done, and, you know, it's kind of just how it goes. So I don't really have much control over this.
What inspired you originally to even write poetry? What inspired you to do that?
I wrote my first poem after reconnecting with a high school friend that is a very creative, independent, inspirational spirit. And him coming into my life and just kind of dropping off all of this positivity and all of this creativity and inspiration, I guess you could say was kind of a muse for me, because it was just, you know, it just made me feel like, wow, you know, it really is possible. It's a possible, like whatever it's really possible. And it all this stuff comes out of my pen and people connect with it. So it's really possible to go ahead and share that in a positive way and get it out there and feed the masses, you know, some food for the soul. And, you know, that's what he does. And I just kind of, you know, I just kind of said, you know what, I can totally do that too. And so I guess he's my muse in a way.
Well, that's great. You know, we all need some people that are supportive in our lives, and when we find them, we grasp hold tightly, because you know, they are supportive of us, and we need to network with all those kinds of positive people, positive influences in our lives.
I agree.
Kind of do away with the negative. You're negative, I'm moving on.
I am going that way. I'm kind of an introvert with an extrovert's mask, you know. I can turn on the whole extrovert thing, but it does exhaust me, much like an introvert. It's been an interesting experience to be an introvert and go places and people recognize me. And it's all connected with the poetry, and I end up having some really interesting conversations with people I never would have met if they hadn't recognized me for my poetry. And I've also had some really strange conversations that I probably could have lived without.
There's always pros and cons.
But yeah, I mean, you know, everything has something for you. You got to pick the good and leave the bad, kind of thing.
Right.
And, you know, so, but I'm really excited about the rally on the 24th.
Yeah, I am too.
At the Austin Capitol. That's super exciting. I invited a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of poets, and a whole bunch of just activist people that, you know, love women and are women and strong women in business. And you know, I hope that as many of us come as do, and, you know, that we can make waves. I think that's a really cool idea, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Oh, I am so glad that you're a part of it. And making waves is a great, great way to put it, because we do want to make waves. We want to, you know, shine and rise above and, you know, do all that and make sure our messages are heard. It's so important, you know, and my mantra on my Domestic Violence Voices Facebook page is always, you know, share your voice. And I'm sure people get tired of me saying it, but it's so important. And I don't care share your voice. You know, you do yours through your poetry. And, you know, some people sing about it. Some people write about it. Some people, you know, people are doing different things. And I find it absolutely amazing. I was on this.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I just got all excited. I had said to somebody that I found it disconcerting how many people enjoy my pain. And she said, Sonny, Yeah. They are not enjoying your pain. They are thankful that you can enunciate theirs. And that totally changed my perspective on my darker poems. You know, I try not to share too many dark poems because I think there's just so much of that. But at the same time, there's just so much of that. You know what I mean? Like, so it's
exactly
just not to touch it, you know, especially when you're working on expressive art such as poetry.
Well, that's so true because there are so many people that are out there and they're not able to express themselves or they don't feel like they have the ability to. They haven't drawn that out of themselves yet. And, you know, when they get inspired, then they will. But, you know, it takes people like you and people like other people that I've come across that really make an impact, you know, for those people that are just getting out of a bad relationship or quite haven't made it out of their bad relationship just yet, that they get inspired by hearing people like you and others that say, you know, I've got confidence, I have strength, I am able to move forward. I am a survivor. And not only am I a survivor, I am a thriver. And, you know, it just gives a different outlook to these people. And they're like, really? I can do that? I can do that. Yeah, exactly.
And it's beautiful when people see themselves in you. And it's beautiful to see yourself in other people and just be like, wow, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, even if it was a you that you've grown from, you know? Mm-hmm. I joke all the time. Sometimes people, you know, I'm pretty active on Facebook and people make posts about, you know, how they delete this person or delete that person. I can tell you right now, mm-hmm. I have some seriously questionable people on my Facebook friends list. And you know what? I leave them because we may learn something from each other. And I feel like nothing really happens by accident. And, you know, I mean, you have to be seriously offensive for me to block you or unfriend you on Facebook. And I usually don't even go for the block. You know, I just feel like there's people grow, people change, people have different life experiences. And, you know, I try really hard not to judge people and not to judge people for their behavior or the way they treat people. You know, I mean, I definitely remove myself from the situation from anybody who's, you know, not real sure how to treat me.
If they're negative,
but, you know, I mean, I feel like it takes all kinds. And some of those questionable people have taught me things. Some of those questionable people have learned things from me, you know. And it's kind of like when that happens, I'm like, you know what, I'm totally glad I didn't delete you that time you said, what you call it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't have learned this right now if I had snapped to the block button, you know, and that's kind of how I live my life. You know, I have hung out with very questionable people, but, you know, I mean, I learn from them and they learn from me. And, you know, it's very much a mutual thing if you let it be.
Right. And I totally agree. You know, I have friends of all types. it's just, you know, they're friends and they, you know, they're human and they have their lives and, you know, I just really appreciate them for being them. And
right.
And if by chance I have a small influence on them, then so be it.
Right. Then that's what we were brought together for. Yeah.
I planted a seed, maybe, you know, so that's all.
I think it's really cool that, you know, just the people that I've met from since I did the rally has been inspiring and it's been uplifting and motivating and to be around such confident and driven, strong women has just been so empowering for me and moving. And I think it's starting to reflect in my poetry. And,
that's good.
And the stuff that I've, we all feed off of each other. And I try to live a very live and let live existence kind of, hey, whatever floats your boat, as long as you're not trying to sink mine and you're cool, you know.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, it's been such an interesting adventure. with the poetry. I've been to some other cities and shared my work. I've met, gotten to hear poets from other cities. And, you know, I mean, I've sold albums in Canada. I've sold albums in South Africa. I've sold albums in Europe on digital.
Wow.
I've sold, a bunch of face-to-face, hand-to-hand albums at performances and, you know, places where I'm not even performing and I just happen to run into somebody and they're like, hey, you have any albums on you? And I'm like, of course I do. I also take cards. If you don't have the cash, don't worry, baby. I got you. I have the swiper.
I hear you. That is great. I think because domestic violence and women's rights issues isn't just a Texas thing, it's not just a United States thing, it's a global thing, and I feel really excited when I hear that people are actually reaching those people, you know, across the world and other communities that we don't even step on their soil, and yet they're listening to our show, or they're listening to or reading a book of ours, or, you know, something. And it's just, like, really amazing. It just boggles my mind about how small this world is in a sense. You know, and yet it takes forever to walk.
I know it. But,
especially my speed right now, but that lymphedema gets in my way sometimes. But, you know, it's just it's just amazing. I just really get amazed by it all.
I get overwhelmed by it sometimes. I can't lie. Sometimes I'm very like, you live where? And you All right.
Cool.
It's a bit surreal. It's really, I think my favorite compliment is when someone tells me that my poetry has touched them. Or actually, no. My favorite compliment is when somebody tells me that I inspired them to start writing. That is the pinnacle for me. You know, I joke all the time that I didn't make this album to get rich. I made it to get reach. And it's, you know, reaching people. And that's... That's really where it touches me as a person, as a woman, as a poet, as an artist, just as a human, living this human experience, walking this earth with other humans and just trying to make my little section of it a little bit better, maybe a little more creative, maybe a little more thoughtful, you know, a few more random acts of kindness. It's just kind of, you know, I try to spread that type of, you know, aura versus the whole negativity and the world is, you know, going to end and, you know, all of that, you know, serious fear-mongering stuff that a lot of the media tries to interject into our lives to make us think that we need 5 cans of mace or we need a gun or a bulletproof jacket or, you know, whatever. And, you know, just out of pure fear. And you know, I gave up on fear. I broke up with fear. I have to say February 20th, 2013, when I got up in front of a room full of people I did not know who were excellent, amazing poets and read my little dinky piece off my piece of paper and shook so bad that my hair was vibrating. That was the day that fear and I broke up. And I just really haven't looked back since. And I still get scared and I still doubt myself, and then, you know, and it's like the universe knows. I'll start to doubt myself, and then I'll get a message from somebody who will tell me that they wrote their first poem because they heard my album, or, you know, that they, you know, they got through a breakup, or they got through, you know, they didn't know that about hip-hop, or, you know, whatever it is that touched them. But it's always something that touched them right when I'm starting to wonder if I'm doing the right thing, going the directions that I'm going with the poems and the releasing of them and the way that I'm presenting it to the public. And then, you know, something like that happens and I'm like, well, I'm doing something right. You know, someone will have a call for poets and I'll get tagged in it. And I'm like, well, I'm doing it right. I'm doing something right. If I'm the person people think of, even if it's one person, if I'm the person that people think of when they hear poet, that that's surreal, and it's overwhelming, but it's amazing, and overwhelming in an amazing way.
Absolutely.
So I was reading the news this morning, and mm-hmm. apparently the Texas Senate has decided that it is a good idea to go ahead and try to pass the bill to drug test welfare recipients.
Really?
Florida tried this. Well, Governor Rick Scott in Florida, his wife is on the board of directors for a drug testing company. So Florida tried this and ended up with only, and they had to reimburse all the negative tests because you have to pay for it up front. And then when it comes negative, the city has to, or the state has to reimburse you. And so 2% of the people, so about 30 people out of the 1,000 to 1,500 people a month that were getting these tests, because you have to get tested every month. It's $30 every month you have to pay for this test. And they have to reimburse if it's negative. Only 2% came up positive. So Texas has decided that this is a good idea. And what blows my mind is they work and work and work and work and work to make affordable health care options like Planned Parenthood and other things like that for our low-income sector, particularly women. And they work to make those inaccessible or, you know, just impossible to find. How are you supposed to get there? It's not on a bus route. It's, you know, five counties over. All of these things, but they have time to go ahead and do this and dump the money that they're going to have to dump into reimbursing the negative testing. And we saw that it crippled Florida. So I'm really not sure where Texas is going with this, but I wanted to make sure that your listeners know that Texas is going with this.
Wow.
And it passed the Senate. It passed the Senate, and now it's headed up to the House, I believe. And but yeah. So I mean, scary times, especially for a woman. You know, I remember when I was in high school, I used to go to Planned Parenthood for my birth control pills and my pap smears and things like that. I wouldn't have been able to afford to go for pap smears if it hadn't been for Planned Parenthood. And I actually had cervical cancer that Planned Parenthood caught. So
really? Wow.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, this is not, it's not an option to just get rid of it. It's just not. And and our legislatures here in this state would rather worry about the 2% of welfare recipients that are on drugs than making accessible health care for women, and young men go there too for STD screenings and other, you know, other types of screenings, sex preventative, you know, condoms or all that stuff, you know, because boys go there too. And it's just not an option to get rid of that in our society. It's just not. You know, people think that Planned Parenthood is synonymous with abortion, and it's not. They refer, very few Planned Parenthood locations actually even perform them. They refer you out to another doctor for the most part. You know, and and I mean, it's, well, the problem is that there's so much rhetoric out there that it all gets jumbled. And the facts get mixed in with the fiction, and next thing you know, you've got Fox News reporting on, I don't know, Obama banned hot dogs or something, you know, it's just really unfortunate to see that our Texas legislature would rather work on that than work on, you know, some of the other things that are seriously impacting our community. Like Travis County has an extremely high rate of AIDS and herpes. Why aren't they doing something about that? Dump some money into an education program about that, you know, something. Oh, but no, we gotta drug test these welfare recipients. You know, I mean, the hooligans. You know, and it's just disconcerting. And I mean, when my children were babies, I had food stamps. Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to eat without them. I mean, I used it as a stepping stone. It wasn't like a lifelong plan, but there was there when I had two kids in diapers that I really didn't know what else to do, and it was there for me. And, I mean, I would have passed the drug test, but you know what I mean? So that was an issue. But I couldn't imagine with two babies in diapers having to get time off work to go to the drug testing facility and on the bus, because I didn't have a car at the time, I would have had to go on the bus. So now you're talking about missing at least a half a day of work. You have to go on the bus, pay $30 you don't have to take this drug screen for the drugs that you don't do just so that you can eat. Just so you can eat. eat, food. One of the three main necessities, food. Just so you can get food, you have to miss a half a day of work. Hopefully you can still pay your rent. And, you know, I mean, it's just such a big bureaucratic waste of time that does nothing but let people who have never lived in a way that they didn't know where their next meal was coming from to keep their thumbs on people who have fallen into a situation where that's the way they're living right now.
Right.
And it just keeps people under the thumb, and it's I think it's sick. Anyways, that article got me really fired up this morning, and I was really excited that I had this radio interview with you because of the rally coming up and Roe v. Wade and being able to tie those two together, you know, women's health care and the legislation against women.
Absolutely.
You know,
sounds like you got a topic there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. So, yeah, because that's powerful. I mean, it's really powerful because, you know, we really need to give some hands up to folks that really need it. And, you know, just to, you know, get from point A to point B. We don't need to kind of push them down and degrade them and demoralize them and whatnot, you know, in the process.
Yeah, and how much worse, you know, how much worse does it make? Now, let's use first scenario example. Let's take a mother, married a soldier who has been deployed and is now has been killed overseas, you know, or has been, or married a guy and he dies in a car accident and they have four kids together. She was a stay-at-home mom homeschooling because they had four kids together. He passes away. She has no income. Now she not only has lost her husband, she's trying to figure out how to feed her kids. Now she has to go for a monthly drug test so that she can figure out how to feed her kids. I mean, talk about just an extra kick them while they're down. I mean, it's just so inconscionable to me. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, to just batter and batter and batter those that have already been battered by our society to the point where they can't do it without help.
Right.
You know, and it's very frustrating for me. You know, I've seen it help a lot of people. I've seen people abuse it, of course. But that's just like, I mean, you can look at painkillers. If I broke my arm, I would need painkillers. Yes, people abuse painkillers. That doesn't mean I don't get any for my broken arm.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of, you know, what they're saying is, well, because that, you know, in 10 years had voter fraud, that we need voter ID. And it's like a couple of people in the whole country.
Yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, and it's just, I mean, the like, I understand the intention underneath some of these laws, but Florida saw real quick that they lost a lot more money than they saved knocking people off of welfare for drug tests. For positive drug tests, they spent a lot more money than they meant to on reimbursing those tests. They really thought a large percentage of people were going to fail those tests. And that just goes to show the mentality of our governing bodies towards the lower income class and people who do need government assistance just to get by. It just
really
illustrates.
That $30 could mean the difference between having money for gas to go somewhere, you know.
Yeah, or a bus fare, or
a bus fare, or
school
Ethan.
Supplies, your light bill. You know,
exactly.
I mean, $30 is a lot when you're at the point where you need federal assistance to get by. $30 is a lot of money when you're like, okay, I don't know where dinner's coming from.
Exactly.
you know, it's just so sad. I wish some of these politicians would step off their high horses and put down their entitlement for a minute and talk to some people on a real level, not a campaign stop level, and talk to some of these people, some homeless people, some, you know, people in rehab facilities, some people that are on welfare, living in housing authority situations. You know, if these politicians would actually stop for a second and understand that we hire them and that they need to take a second to figure out who we are so that they can serve us. And we need to get money out of campaigns, but that's a whole nother thing. But, you know.
Absolutely.
The multi-million dollar donations to campaigns. Get out of here. Get out of here, DuPont. Get out of here, you know, Hearst Publishing. We know what your goal is, you know. We understand why, you know, you're donating for just tough on crime, quote unquote, tough on crime candidate when you are the Corrections Corporations of America. You know, of course you're voting for the guy with three strikes on his campaign platform, because that's more people to fill your beds for your federal money for your privately owned correctional institution. You know, I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. I can go on for days about the social.
I know.
Well,
you know, I think it's really important that we do keep on having that dialogue of having about social justice issues, about women's rights, you know, about, you know, being able to move forward and kind of bringing to focus, you know, look at what we're doing here and reevaluating, you know, do we really need to be charging $30 for everybody to have a drug test? Yet, you know, okay, we're going to reimburse the ones that come up negative, but why do that two-step dance? Why, you know, why even
and,
create more havoc? You know, that doesn't make
sense. And here's the thing. If you miss your drug test appointment for any reason, then your benefits are suspended. So say your bus breaks down, or your appointment is at 3 and your bus doesn't get you there till 3:15 and they won't give you your drug test that day. Well, guess what? You just got your food stamp suspended for the month.
Oh, man.
Until your next drug test is scheduled, and they schedule them. You don't get any say. Yeah.
Crazy.
So there are a lot of ways that they use that as just another roadblock. It's just another roadblock, you know. And I believe every 3 months you have to go and recertify for all your welfare anyways. You have to go every 3 months and show them that nothing's changed and all that good stuff to stay current. And, I mean, that's a hindrance for somebody who's on the bus or who's trying to keep their job or, you know, a lot of jobs aren't giving people time off. There are a lot of unemployed people that are more than happy to take that position.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's there's just so much. I mean, I didn't mean to totally run off with your interview. But.
No, you're perfectly fine, you know, because that's what we're leaning towards is, you know, going to the rally and being able to speak up and, you know, understand the gravity of the issues. And that's why we have you and other speakers up there, you know, trying to relate all this good information to us and educate everybody about what is actually going on with our legislation. You know, why are we concerned? Why do we need to get rally up and get unified?
exactly.
You know, why do we need to do all this? And that's why it's so powerful when you and the other speakers will be up there and telling us, you know, showing us, demonstrating why we are doing all this. You know, why is
Absolutely.
The point of doing all this? So I'm just so thrilled for you to be a part of this.
I'm so honored to have been
rally.
Asked. I mean, I was really blown away and honored when I was asked to join in with the speakers at the No Mas No More rally. I mean, that was my first rally, and I kind of have anxiety issues, especially in large crowds. So I was really, you know, that was really out of my comfort zone. So to even go, and this will be my second rally ever, you know, on the 24th. So
and it'll probably be a lot larger crowd, but you'll be among friends.
Well, and that's it. And you know, I have to say that I was immediately calmed down at the No Mas No More rally when I had said that to somebody else, and she was like, "Honey, we're all survivors here. If you think anybody here doesn't have an issue with crowds, then you've got another thing coming." And that just kind of made me feel better. I was like, "All right," because I wanted to be there, you know. And I've been doing a lot of getting out of my comfort zone stuff, you know. I mean, getting up and speaking in front of people is completely out of my comfort zone. So, you know, I've been doing consistently stepping out of that little box, that little circle that, you know, society tries to put us as women in, you know, that's kind of why I did my CD cover. Kind of looks like 1950s housewife. It's very vintage. It's got the old school, you know, the pearl necklace and the,
right.
and the polka dot dress. And, you know, right. it's very old school. But then when you pop in my CD, I think this was one of the coolest compliments about my CD is that when I looked, she said, when I looked at it, I was like, okay, 1950s housewife doing poetry. Okay, this isn't, I don't know if this is something I'm going to like. And she said when she popped it in and heard me start talking, it was like that 1950s housewife saying all the things that 1950s housewives weren't allowed to say.
Right.
And I honestly hadn't really thought of that connection. I just really like, I'm kind of an old soul, and I just really like that vintage feel and the vintage, you know, my next album is going to have more live instrumentation, more of like a smoky jazz club than hip hop beats. But,
oh, cool.
You know,
yeah.
I really like that interpretation of my work and the whole concept of the whole album, you know,
right.
and how it all came together, how I thought it would. And that was just a really cool experience to have somebody really kind of see into my whole thought process behind the way that I did the concept.
Would you mind giving our listeners just a tiny bit of a sample of what you do?
Sure. We have a couple of options. I can either play an instrumental or I can play you a track off of my CD.
Either, whatever you're most comfortable with.
All right. Well, I say we play a track off of the CD.
Okay.
If I can get it to play while I'm on the phone. Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. So this track is called Door. It's short.
Okay.
And it was one of the first pieces that I wrote for this album, one of the first that I chose for this album, and it's in the beginning of the CD, and I kind of feel like it's a door for people to walk through. So here it is. This is Door.
Word, written in the grain of the wood that can only be read by the light shining through the crack. I read these words and his spirit vibrates my being, my third eye seeing the beauty before my eyes. Despite his ugly lies, for example, the work of beauty inside. I sit back and analyze, retracing my steps. I'm trying to find what led me here. Soldier, there, and alone. I'm out of my comfort zone, but on my search, I found a tool. One that's familiar yet still shiny. It opens the door from the hinges and lets light into the dark recesses of my mind. Places I don't go for reasons I don't say. It's been such a long time. Come with me.
So hopefully that came through okay.
Yeah. That was good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's how a lot of my my work is just kind of flows that way. And I had somebody listen to one of my poems that I read, and they compared it to beat poetry. And I said, well, okay. I just kind of, I mean, it's very, my poetry comes out very much the way I talk. I kind of speak that way. So it's very, I try to keep it very natural, and I don't do too much editing. If I do quote unquote editing, it's like and or a but or something for emphasis, a pause here or a word there, or I try not to overthink it or over analyze it, and I just kind of let it be what it wants to be.
Now that's the best way to do it. Very organic.
I agree.
Yeah.
So it's been such an amazing adventure. That album actually went from idea to release in under 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah, and
nice.
It's on iTunes. Yeah, it's on iTunes, it's on Amazon, it's on Spotify, CD Baby. You can actually order a physical copy of it on CD Baby. You can listen to it on Bandcamp and buy it there from my website, which is sunnysofapoetry.com.
Uh-huh.
And, so for public consumption.
Well, I am just so thrilled to get to talk to you this afternoon and just kind of banter with you about all kinds of different issues and learn a few more from you, too, in the process. Awesome. It's always good. It's always a journey. And I can't wait to see you on the 24th and at the Texas State Capitol, at the rally, and for you to share your voice with us all. And I can't wait. I really can't
wait. I'm really excited. I thank you so much for having me on your show. What a pleasure.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. And if you ever want to come back on and, you know, say, hey, Kat, I got a little update here and I would like to come back on your show anytime. Okay? Seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would love that.
Yeah. Anytime. Well, thank
pleasure.
You.
Thank you so much.
And you are so very welcome. And do something good for you today, okay?
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. I have a meeting in a little while about a show that I'm working on. And I already did good things. I ate French toast, pancakes, and eggs and bacon. I already did good things.
For
Oh,
wow.
I mean, I didn't eat
that's
them all,
great.
But I sure did try.
Right, right. A little sampling from each, yeah. Oh, that way to go. That sounds delicious.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Anyway. Okay. Talk about consumption.
She's like, I'm going to go eat now. And she's got it over
back. Pancake. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Oh.
All right, beautiful. Well, you have a gorgeous, blessed day. Enjoy some of the sunshine before we lose it again.
Absolutely. And before another deep cold front takes over. But anyway, have a good day. Thank you,
you too.
So much. All right.
Thank you, Catherine. All right.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Be blessed. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And listeners, yes, we have more to come. I'm just so excited. And Sunny just really just kind of set the pace and is an example of what we're going to be educated about and what inspired about and some call to actions that will be presented at the rally and can't wait. Just very excited. On Tuesday, I have Penny. On Wednesday, I have Kayla. On Thursday, I have Nissa. On Friday, Marsha. And then next Saturday, I have, I just scheduled her this morning. Join us 10 a.m. on those days. Check back often because I keep scheduling more. I can't wait. I hope you are inspired by these people. Listen to the others that I have posted on the blogtalkradio.com/oral history because that's their lives, their stories that they're sharing with us. And check in with Domestic Violence Voices on Facebook and keep on moving on. Keep sharing your voices. Have a great day.